in the series of 10. And today, if you look over at Exodus, the 20th chapter, and the commandment that we'll be looking at today is Exodus 27. And it says, "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." So when you were growing up, and maybe even today, what did you think that commandment meant? Is there anybody here that hadn't heard that? Or typically that's the first thing that comes to people's mind. I mean, I know when I was growing up, that was, you know, that's how it was explained to me. You know, don't take the Lord's name in vain. And by the way, that's true. we tend to be pretty literal, don't we? When we think about things and don't take the Lord's name in vain. We hear, you know, don't take other people's name in vain. You know, don't disrespect their name. You know, don't disrespect them. You know, because when you disrespect somebody, you're attacking their character. You know, that's really kind of taking their name in vain. You know, meaningless, empty, void, that type of a thing. We serve a God who is the creator of the universe, created all things. You know, by the way, he created us. And so there's so much in that commandment itself that I think is pretty rich and pretty deep that we probably don't necessarily think about when it comes to reading that commandment. I think we just read it and we think, okay, well, I'm not going to curse, and we kind of blow through it, or we kind of substitute. So there's terms that we use that everybody knows you're measuring yourself and you're controlling your tongue maybe 25%, so you're not saying, you know, the full name in vain, but you're using terms that everybody knows that's what you're doing in of itself. Sometimes, have you ever done that and in your mind know consciously what you did? I think there's a lot of times that we do things that we're aware we probably rocked on the edge, but we rationalize it and say, well, at least I didn't say it.
Lack of a better way to phrase it is asking God's judgment on something. You know what I mean? Asking God to damn or judge something.
Oh, right.
So that's a little bit different than just a swear word. I mean, we call that swear words, but that I think is other than. And sometimes we just use the name of Christ, just, you know, we say Jesus Christ in such an expression, in such a way that it is, and that's part of that condemnation, and, you know, the Bible clearly teaches we don't have that. Those are, I think, the two common that uses and how we, and again, my first is like you, swear word by word, but then I think a lot of people use it in the other sense too. Yes, it's a swear word, but it's specifically doing something that isn't within our power and isn't how God works. So,
and sometimes we invoke, same thing, invoking God's name as though we're some type of an authority that can. and typically it's through an attitude of judgment that we have a tendency to invoke God's. And I think that kind of meets the test here: thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain.
And in that sense, not only are we judging, we're invoking God's judgment upon it, which we really have not the power to do either.
Right.
All the slang too, language. I know I've been guilty. You know, gosh. I mean, what are you really saying?
Right.
And you know, it's the same thing. You're just, you know, trying to get away with it by changing the wording. And there's a lot of slang out there that's offensive too.
And these are all pretty common views of how people interpret this, and they're all, you know, appropriate interpretations. There's nothing wrong with it. But the reality is, this is a much, much richer and a much deeper, unfortunately, commandment than probably we have really ever reflected upon. And we're going to reflect upon it in a world that we live today, but we're also going to reflect on it, you know, through the eyes of Jesus. And his reflection is not only to individuals, it's also to nations. You know, a nation can take God's name in vain by its actions and its choices that it makes too. And we're going to see Israel as a nation did that pretty good. Sometimes it's very overt, sometimes it's very covert. Overt meaning just it's just out there. Covert meaning it's kind of hidden, but the intention is there to do it. Nations have done things in the name of Christ, in the name of God, that I would suggest takes this commandment and as a nation and turns it upside down, rationalizes behaviors and choices that we make.
Are you going to talk about the Abraham Lincoln quote?
No. What is it? Go ahead.
I don't remember exactly, but it, I mean, it was kind of a unique battle in that we had two Protestant, you know, in the Civil War, and he was talking about the fact that we both nations, the Confederacy and the
Union.
Yeah, thank you. I think they won too, but anyway, this totally slipped my mind. But how that both of them were calling, and he said it. He had a way with phrases, but talking about we both, and it concerned him about the fact that the God he was praying to, the God his nation was praying to, is the same God they were praying to, and it was just kind of interesting. That, and I don't remember the exact phrase, but talking about, you know, we need to pray harder, and hopefully God has a bigger plan.
Right.
And it just kind of interesting as a nation. And you talking about that, and talking about Israel, made me think of, you know, the foundations of our nation and on our money and some of those things, you know, Pledge Allegiance and all those things. Where is the line of hypocrisy, where's the line of taking the Lord's name in vain? And I think those two are probably different. You know, to say in God we trust and yet as a nation we don't, clearly that's, you know, like the minimum of hypocrisy, if not in vain. And I hadn't really considered until you were talking.
I think it meets that test. I think it really does. I mean, I think When you the more that you stop and you really think about, you know, how you use, how we use and invoke God's name, in of itself meets this test.
I think the one that always got me, and I assume it's true. I don't know where I heard it or whatever, but it was the gigantic when they had built it. When the builder said, "Not even God Himself can sink the ship."
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's really when you stand back and you start thinking about our own individual behaviors, our behaviors of our society. You look across nations. You know, this probably is if it's not the most prevalent commandment, it's got to be up there on the top in terms of just the pure breadth of how we invoke God's name. And you're right. I mean, you know, even to the point to where today it's the confusion around, you know, we all serve the same God. That in of itself waters down and meets this test. Because remember, what was this about? What were the Ten Commandments about? Who gave the Ten Commandments? God. And who did he give them to?
His people.
His people. And ultimately, they cast their shadow upon all of us. But he gave them to them out of what?
Out of love.
And remember when he said he gave them to them because he was what kind of a God? He was a jealous God. So he gave us these commandments and he gave us this. And he says, I got to tell you, folks, I'm jealous that you don't take my name in vain. But it also, you know, out of love, what happens when somebody disrespects you in a relationship? Someone that you really care an awful lot about? You spoke to it in your devotion. Words
hurt.
Yeah, it's not sticks and stones. I mean, they do break bones, but words do hurt. And whose image are we created in? God's. So is it not safe to assume to connect those dots to say that it's hurtful to him when he sees his name taken in vain, when he sees his name misused? And ultimately what we're going to have to do when we look at this lesson, we're going to see the video now, is it gets back to the intention of your heart. The intention of your heart as a nation, the intention of your personal accountabilities, your personal decisions. So there's a full breadth of things here that you know, this probably on the surface looked like maybe it was the easiest commandment to be able to identify with, and boy, we can just plow through it. But there's an awful lot more going on here than I think that we stop and reflect with regard to taking God's name in vain. So let's go ahead and see the third episode here.
In LA, everyone is selling something. Sometimes it's a movie, sometimes it's something far worse. But in the City of Angels, everything is for sale, especially your soul. Lance has one purpose in life, to separate you from your money. And he's good at it, too. Every time you've pulled something out of your bag and forgotten why you bought it in the first place, Lance made you
bottom
do
line,
it.
You were one crazy weekend in Vegas, away from disaster. Perfect.
Water. At first glance, well, you're impressed. The essence of life, the giver of life, is clear, pure, refreshing. And it's all right here, in a nice little bottle. But if it's so great, why are your sales plummeting? What is this?
A spaghetti noodle.
A wet spaghetti noodle. Gold star for you, sir. What is it worth? What does it inspire? Nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what your product is. Nothing. It's water. No taste, no calories, no color, and it isn't even from some mountain spring in the Alps. It's from a spigot, run through a filter.
So you can't help us?
Oh no, Gord. I can help anyone. The question is not, can you sell nothing? But who do you have doing your selling? Last year, over $150 billion were spent on celebrity endorsements. But who's your celebrity? I mean, let's face it. You get the wrong person, you're throwing your money in the garbage can. I mean, look. We all have our secrets. Isn't that right, Frank?
How do you know?
We're all friends. But your average celebrity has more skeletons in their closet than Arlington National Cemetery. Bottom line, You're a crazy weekend in Vegas away from disaster.
Then why use one?
I don't have just any celebrity. I have the perfect celebrity. I have a name so synonymous with perfection that people will line up for miles just for a sip of your glorified tap water. Members of the board, I give you God water, created by the Almighty. What bigger endorsement exists but God? We have, for free, mind you, the endorsement of the world's biggest celebrity. I mean, this guy's name ID is off the charts. A figure who will never be in a scandal, whose reputation is perfect. I mean, what's the competition gonna do? Argue water with the one who created it? Come on! Here's the tag. God water. Perfect refreshment from the one who invented perfection. What do you think, Gord?
We all love water, its peace, its purity. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Now that goodness is available to us all. God water, perfect refreshment from the one who invented perfection.
Thank you, God.
Godwater. Well, he almost sold me. I mean, it was pretty impressive. I kept listening to him thinking, well, that's a good point. Good point. As you look at the third commandment, it says, don't misuse the name of God. I mean, don't try to leverage God's name in a way that it wasn't intended to be used. Don't use God's name in a way that he has no part of it. As I grew up as a kid, I always heard the third commandment and was always, don't use the Lord's name in vain. And I never really knew what that meant. So someone told me, well, there's a few words that you use that you don't want to attach God's name to. So I thought, okay, I'll make sure I don't do that. So as far as commandments went, I did pretty good with this one. But I was always kind of perplexed. I mean, here's the third commandment. I mean, here's one of the top three. And tell me it has something more to do than just blurting out some words when I mishit a tee shot or burn something in the oven. Tell me it's more than that. And so that's why I love where it says, don't misuse the name of God, because it brings more clarity. Don't leverage God's name and use it in a way it wasn't intended to be used. Don't try to use God's name in a way that benefits you and has nothing to do with him. And I was trying to think to myself, well, how do I do this? Or how have I done this? And I was thinking of a few months ago when I was preaching a message. And during the message, as an illustration, I said that my kids wanted a basketball hoop in the front of the house. So that night, I got 4 emails from people who said that they were willing to give us a hoop. And I thought, well, I can't take it, because if I take it, I can never use illustrations again. But you can see how that would be dangerous, misusing God's name for my benefit. Or you'll hear stories about how people try to network at church, and they'll try to be more spiritual or more godly. They'll try to make connections or business deals or build relationships, pretending to be something when they're really not it, just to get a connection. Or people will be in a singles group, and they'll try to be a little more spiritual, pretend to be a little more Christian, just to create a relationship, misusing God's name or leveraging it in the wrong way. I think back in my life, and there are times when I lived wild and I kind of did things the wrong way. And I would think on like a Saturday night, I can go out and just do whatever I wanted to do and live any way I wanted to live, because I always knew on Sunday I could just go and ask God to forgive me. Just bring it to God. He'll wipe it clean. Live any way you want. It doesn't matter. Misusing God in a way that his name wasn't intended to be used. Do you ever wonder what made Jesus mad? I mean, really mad? Do you ever wonder what kind of flipped him out? I mean, there's some stories where you're here and you'll think, well, that's going to be it. Like, a woman is caught in adultery and brought to him. But he doesn't get mad. He's tender. And he shows mercy. And he points her in the right direction. He has a conversation with the woman at the well. She tries to manipulate him. But he doesn't get mad. He just tries to show her a different way. Or how about this? He's mocked and he's ridiculed and he's put on the cross. And as he's being crucified, he looks down at the people that are mocking him. I mean, you'd think that that's when he's going to get mad. That's when he's going to get angry, but he doesn't. He does just the opposite. He cries out to his Father and actually asks him to forgive them. So where does Jesus really get mad? He's walking to the temple, and as he's up at the temple, he's looking and seeing these people who are selling animals for sacrifices. And they're selling these animals for huge prices. And what they're doing is they're misusing the name of God for their own interests. They're leveraging God's name for what is best for them. They're using God's name in a way that benefits them, in a way that God has nothing to do with. Gouging the people for money. And using God's name. They're mocking God. They're mocking his name. To leverage God's name, to misuse it, to try to sell it, it's a dangerous game. Even when you're trying to sell something as pure as water.
I liked thought this was one of the more well done videos I've seen with regard to the polish of the marketing scheme. I mean, when the writer there at the end, he was talking and he talked about, he's almost kind of pulled you in. How many of you found yourself going, that's a pretty good point?
It almost still seems like a good idea. I mean, it's really slick.
It does. Very, very slick. You know, I found myself, and I've seen this thing now probably 5 or 6 times, and I find myself going, with a few tweaks here and there, you know, I can soothe my own conscience, and I can really see how you could use that. I mean, his name is synonymous with perfection. You know, who's going to smear him in a campaign? You just stop and you think about it. I think the genius of it too is also that even when you saw the polish when he's using there in Genesis about the waters and the reality is that's all true stuff from a spiritual standpoint of view. God is the living water, and the metaphors that are there that are incredible. That you actually could teach preach a sermon on itself. But what was the mistake of the salesman? What did he do? How did you see him misusing? And I like the term misuse. I mean, it kind of connects a little bit more, misusing God's name. What did he do that misused God's name? What was the intent of his heart?
His own fault.
What's that? Just using it. For what purpose?
To make them.
Yes. for his own personal gain. But he was probably rationalizing his choice also, because who else was benefiting from it?
Water company.
The water company, yeah. Who was hurt? Who was hurt by marketing God's name as the creator of the water? I mean, what's the big deal here? God was?
Yeah. It's just the assumption on the salesman's part that God wouldn't care and that you can just use God however you want because he's nameless and faceless.
Yeah. Obviously, God was hurt by it. Yeah. What does it say about God to other people? How does it represent? I mean, what did God mean to that salesman?
A means to an end.
How many of us in our prayers use God as a means to an end? Whose name do we pray in? Whose will do we pray in? Oh, we pray in our will, don't we? We say thy will be done, but is there any parallels to this, to that? The other thing, think about it. He says he doesn't have any skeletons in his closet. Oh, by the way, how much did he have to pay for his endorsement? Nothing. Genius of that. There's no price to be paid for a relationship with God or to use his name. Is that a true statement?
I think there's going to be a price to be paid. Accountability. So.
Yeah, there's an accountability, yeah. The point is that God's name was so watered down in this that the real God wasn't being shared. And so there were a lot of people being harmed because that's the image that people get of God. That God is a God that is there when we want something. Or we might say he's there when we need something. But if we really stand back and are honest with ourselves, we tend to have a relationship based more on need with God or want with God than we perceive a need to have a relationship with God. Does that make sense? Let's go ahead, and we're going to hear two scriptures we're going to listen to, and they are Mark 11, 14 through 17, and then John 2, 14 through 16. Okay, and we're just going to go ahead and go through these. There's 5-8 verses, something like that. Just listen to them. This is the account, though, that the author referenced about Jesus going into to the temple. But let me first give you a little bit of context of when he did this. This was 3 years earlier. He'd actually gone in and was pretty offended by what he saw going on in the temple of God. Now, the temple of God, what did that represent? Not only what does it represent, what was it? It was a place where God met with the people. Was it just for the Jews? No. I mean, clearly the Jews were the ones that ministered and the tribal Levite and all that. But there was a court, an outer court, and what was that court called? Court of the Gentiles, yeah. Okay. And this was kind of on the outer court. And then when you go on the outer court, there was all the wall around and there was a lot of places where people, it was kind of like a market. But in this inner court, which was actually part of God's house, the court of the Gentiles was in God's house. Is that a fair statement? Okay. And this is where Jesus, in this example that we're going to hear, you know, remember when he came in to 3 days before or 3 days. Maybe right before, it may have been 3 days. Anyway, right before his crucifixion, he comes into Jerusalem on a donkey, okay, fulfilling Old Testament prophecy. He comes in, he's riding in, and this is the account of him actually going into the temple and what he was seeing. Now remember, people were coming to Jerusalem for what purpose at the time of the year of Christ's death? It's called the Passover. Okay, and remember, the Passover was where, you know, it was honoring God for delivering Israelites out of Egypt, out of bondage. And this is where that they put the blood of the lamb across their doorpost. Death angel came by, and if the blood wasn't applied there, then the firstborn child was killed. So he asked them to do this in remembrance. So you fast forward now, you know, 1,500 years, you know, 1,000 years, something like that. And so, you know, the Jews have been pretty good about honoring this annual Passover per what God's instruction had been. So now he's with his disciples. Christ is with his disciples. He's coming into Jerusalem. And that's the backdrop under which he enters into this, the temple of God, which, by the way, if you go back and you do a full study of it, that's holy ground. It's holy. Okay. And we've studied about what holy means, but holy means reverent, God's presence. This was his house. He was inviting people into his house. When we invite people into our house, do we expect them to show some respect out of courtesy? Do we get frustrated when people come over and they have total disregard for our things and what we have? Has that ever happened for you? Somebody's left and say, "Whew, I never thought they'd leave. Love them to death, but whew." So that's kind of the context now. Jesus is riding in. He sees the temple. He crosses over the Kidron Valley. He looks up, and he goes into the temple, and he goes through the court of the Gentiles. And that's the visual that we're going to hear these verses on.
And Jesus answered and said unto it, "No man eat fruit of thee hereafter forever." And his disciples heard it. And they come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple and began to cast out them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple. And he taught, saying unto them, "Is it not written, My house shall be called of all nations the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves." Found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the changers of money sitting. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money, and overthrew the tables, and said unto them that sold doves, "Take these things hence, make not my Father's house an house of merchandise."
As everybody turned over, could you all turn over to at least the one in Mark, the 11th chapter? Verses 14 through 17. So, based on what you heard, and if you followed along, what happened? What's the story that unplayed here in Mark and John? Jesus got angry. Okay, what was he angry at? So he was angry at who? I'm being very intentional here. At those that were selling? Okay. Well, because I want to come back to that. Because there's actually, when you read this, there's...
He was probably angry at the ones who allowed it in the first place, because these were, you know, Gentiles, for the most part, selling and making a profit off the animals, but it's the people in charge of the temple that allowed it.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, the reality was there was a lot of people that were kind of in cahoots here. Uh-huh. In fact, what had to happen if you brought in an animal, it had to be deemed fit, perfect enough to be sacrificed by who? The priest, and the people that were of the priestly tribe. The Levites were all part of, you know, working in the temple. But the priests themselves probably had said, you know, just like we see today, you know, the good housekeeping seal. You know, we as a nation, or the Olympic Committee, this is, you see this all the time. The Olympic Committee, you know, endorses different products. And so that they'll do their products and they'll say this is endorsed. And then they'll say we're the only, car company that's endorsed by the Olympic. It's official car of the Olympics. That's kind of what was going on here. And it appears, if you go back in history, that, you know, some of it, there were people who were poor enough they came such a distance that it was not feasible to bring their own sacrifice with them. There were those that had probably been burned before, brought their own, and went in and said, sorry, but this doesn't meet the test. You know, you're going to have to buy one from us. You think there were kickbacks going on? Do you think that there were people who were benefiting in the, quote, the church? Do you ever see that happening today? Unfortunately, I think we do. Do you see the televangelist back in the late 80s and the early 90s? Boy, they were big business. Big business. And it wasn't... It was business.
Well, we still see that. Television networks that do it.
Yeah?
Yeah. 10 minutes of sharing the gospel and 40 minutes of talking about
how you need to find it. So... what's the intent of their heart? They're pretty close. I mean, they're trying to say we want to get God's love and God's mercy and all those types of things out there.
Business model.
But when you drive down one little layer, typically we find these people are driving around and their use of the money and their lifestyle
to advance their kingdom.
Yeah, I like the way he said that, John. To advance their kingdom, to advance what they're trying to build, what they're trying to do. And who's left in the wake of that? All the people that truly were giving out of the heart, thinking they were doing the right thing, trusting. Other examples that you see it unfolding in society today? Who's hurt by it?
Everybody.
Everybody is, yeah.
There's even just the general commercialization of gimmick and gadgetry. Mm-hmm. I guess you see a lot of those things that I think sometimes people are drawn, they like it, or if I have this, then someone will see and know what I stand for, this kind of thing. But really, bottom line is, think about it.
Yeah, no, it is. Even the God water thing, when you stop and think about it, you know, and the analogy of Christ being the living water, you know, it's free. All you have to do is accept it. And in this particular case, you know, water was something you had to sell. Do we see it play out in a one step off from religion or church? Of how God's name is misused. Boy, I tell you, if you go and look in the yellow pages, and how often do you see a truck going by and it maybe has fish on it? Now, I think there's people that are very meaningful and probably are good workmen. But I've got to tell you, there was a time when I first started seeing that, you know, I probably was pulled a little bit in the direction of going, I support someone who I think is accepted Christ and is a saved individual. You know, integrity. But I tell you now, I see that used so misused that, in fact, sometimes I even push that much farther away from it because my perception is that they are doing exactly what was going on here and exactly what was happening in the temple when Christ went in. What's that?
Look what's happened to the word God. Yeah. Freely given, and try to buy somebody a Bible.
Right.
And afford to.
Right.
And I understand you need to pay public printing costs, but it goes beyond that.
No, you're exactly right. Look there at Mark, though, the 11th chapter, verses 14 through 17, because I always kind of, you know, blow by this part, because we're talking about those who are trying to take advantage and misuse of God's name. But there's another body of people here that, if you read the, well, first of all, the 11th verse, or the 14th verse, I want to address this only because, you know, Brother Greg and I, you know, scratched our head a little bit of why this verse was here. And it says, "And Jesus answered and said unto them," meaning his disciples, "no man eat fruit of thee hereafter, hereafter forever." And his disciples heard it. Why was that in these verses? If you go back and you read the previous verses, he's talking about the fig tree. And this is not the parable of the fig tree. Fig tree, though, was synonymous with Israel in a lot of the scriptures. And as I understand it, fig trees, you know, when the leaves grow, the figs grow at the same time. Oftentimes you see leaves come on and then the fruit starts bearing afterwards. As I understand it, the leaves and the fig trees actually kind of grow at the same time. And they're harvested at least twice in a year, as I understand it. And what he was saying to these people was, in fact, if you read the verses above, he's like he's looking afar off and he was hungry, and he saw this, what appeared to be a beautiful fig tree, lush leaves. He gets over to the tree, and there's no figs on it. And then he moves right in to talking about going into the money changers. Boy, it looked good. It looked like they were doing a pretty booming business down there at the temple. People getting ready for the Passover. A lot of stuff going on, but when he got there, there was no fruit. And look at this here now. 14th verse and the 15th verse. And the they there is who? The disciples and Jesus come to Jerusalem, and Jesus went into the temple and began to cast them out. And we talked about who was them. Go over to what we read over in John. These were the people who had the doves. They were selling. He's the money changers. Money changers were somebody, they were charging back then interest to convert your Romans, dinero or whatever they were, to the Jewish, to the shekels, 10 to 15%. Now, first of all, that was against Jewish law back then, because the Jews weren't to charge interest for anything. Okay, that was Jewish law. But look what it says here. "And Jesus went into the temple and began to cast them out, and sold them and that sold and bought into the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold the doves." And he began to cast out them that sold. And what's the second word there? Who else did he kick out? Those that were buying. So why was he casting them out? It's kind of like, I kind of envision it like, you know, boy, this is the happening place to be. I'm going up to the temple. You know, this is the place. This is the mall. This is where there's where all the activity, all the people from foreign countries are coming down here. This is a big deal. This is a big party. Where was their heart? Were they there for the right reason? Or were they there to be seen? So we always focus on the people who were selling. But there's equal weight placed to those that were buying. And in fact, is it here? Yeah, look at the 16th verse. It says, "And would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple." What does that mean? So he's got three categories of people. Those that were selling. There was the indictment in the background of what was happening with the priests. When you look at other contexts, they were all part of this. Those that were there just for the purpose of being seen, whose heart wasn't in the right place, they were misusing God's name. "We're going up there because we're celebrating God. This is the Passover." But their heart, the intent of their heart was not there. And then there's a fourth category that's talked about, and he would not suffer that any man should carry any vessel through the temple. What did it become? Hey, it was a shortcut to get across Jerusalem. I'm going up the stairs. I can visualize it. I'm going up the stairs. There were several stairs that went into the Gentiles, the court of the Gentiles. It was happening. I could go up and I could walk through. I could check it all out. But they're carrying dirty vessels. They're carrying stuff, pots and pans, whatever it was, to get from destination A to destination B. And the closest way to do that was to go through the court of the Gentiles. Remember where we started the conversation out? The court of the Gentiles, the temple of God was what? Holy. Holy. Do you think these people were misusing the name of God? I think so. There's a lot there in that third commandment. But we have nations. Just think about the nations that invoked the Crusades. The Crusades were about misusing God's name. There was a whole nation that misused God's name, or they blurred the lines of God's name. Hezekiah came in into power, and what he did, he went up to the groves and he got rid of all the false gods. They were misusing God's name. Any last thing? Our time is up. I really like the discussion of the point about the woman at the well and hanging on the cross. When you talk about it, you can get angry. What made him angry was that. Who else? There was another. You we had a lesson on it, and you taught a message here the other day. When did God get angry? Example, towards an individual. Moses. Moses' five greatest excuses. God was patient with him on the fourth or the first four, and on the fifth one, it was because, I don't really think I really want to do this. That's when God got angry. He was able to work with him all the other. I can't speak. I'm not a leader. I can take care of that. But when he said he didn't really want to serve, when it really got down to it, that's when he got angry. Don't misuse God's name. Don't take him for granted. That's what that's about. He wants, remember, this is his covenant with us, his love letter, so to speak.
I like the word that he used in the description explaining it. He used the word, we try to leverage.
Right.
I like the analogy and the word that and thou shalt not do this and misusing. I just thought that was a very descriptive word.
I think also in the last verse here, point, it was never the intent, and we read it throughout Scripture, sacrifice wasn't what pleased. It was, what's the intent of the heart? I mean, if you didn't have it, God was fine with that. I mean, you had to go back, and wasn't it, bring your neighbors in or whatever. If you have it and they don't, it wasn't, use your last penny to do this, right? Because this is what's going to please me.
It was the intent of the heart. And there were some who was there whose heart was, their intent was there because they were there to sacrifice to God for the right reasons. There was another category of people that didn't have a clue, but it was a place to go to the mall and be around people and kind of be part of the happening thing. There was a group of people there who wanted to be seen by other people and say, look at me, I'm religious, look what I'm doing. He had another group of people who were trying to take advantage of it and make money off of it. What?
I mean, I think that's part of taking out the ones who were buying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well said.
Sometimes I think we inhibit and perpetuate sin because we sometimes participate.
We do. Great points. Okay, everybody, I'm sorry we're about 5 minutes over.